Hello? Hello? Hello?
I think it's just us.
Oh,
it's Daryl here. It's Daryl here.
Yeah, oh, good. That's great. I decided to get here a little early today so we could have some music other than the music of the teleconference.
Oh, great.
So I'm getting to welcome you all.
Oh, how nice. How are you feeling?
Yeah. I'm feeling better. I'm still, as you can hear, a little bit hoarse. But I'm fine.
You sound
well.
Much better, you do. Excellent.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
So tell me, how's the connection?
The connection sounds fine on my end.
Okay. Is there anyone else here? Yes. So we're doing a little sound check here as we get started. So if anyone is having a hard time with the connection, speak up and we'll see if we can get it better. But it sounds pretty good. So those of you who are arriving, as you will be for the next couple of minutes before we start,
yes,
what you're
yes.
listening... Hi, this is
hello.
Sally.
Hello.
Hi, Sally. Hello. Hi,
Deborah Foyer.
Hi, Deborah. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
So, for a few minutes, people will be coming
Donnie.
And announcing yourselves, and hello, and then I'm going to turn off the entrance and exit chimes and turn off the mute everybody so that we can start. Hi.
Hi.
So once again, I'd like to ask you how the sound feels to you. How's the reception on the call?
Good. Very
good.
Clear.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
Okay, perfect. So, my dear ones, welcome, and I'm going to mute us. Turn off the entrance and exit chimes, and I won't mute myself. And as you know, there'll be times during
Hi.
The call when...
Jane yes. Michaud calling from Charlotte, Vermont.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
Excuse
so,
me. I interrupted.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. It's, I'm just explaining our next steps here. So, as I say, I'm going to turn off the entrance and exit chimes and mute you all. So, but at certain moments during the call, I'll ask you to unmute yourselves by pressing *6, and then you'll be able to ask questions or share anything that comes up. So, here we go. The music you're listening to is Om Namah Shivaya, sung by the singers of the Sacred Art of Living, who are devotees of a contemporary Indian guru named Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. The album is available on iTunes. And here we go. Again, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to our second class in Meditation in the Three Faces of Spirit. And once again, I'm Sally. As you can hear, my voice is a little bit more approaching normal this week. And I personally am enjoying the slightly husky quality of it. There's a wonderful kind of egoless feeling about not having what your, quote, real voice. It allows you to feel that that you can say things that you wouldn't normally say, which is quite fun. The one thing I want to say is that I've loved the sharings on the listserv and the experience that you've been having, especially the experiences you've been sharing of letting yourself be seen by the universe. As someone said, that it's subtle and it takes a while to get it, and that it also actually busts a lot of those feelings we have about being alone, or about the presence of spirit being something difficult, or you know, a kind of Santa who's watching us to see if we're being good or bad. So if anyone is there's
I can hear some sounds on the call that make me feel as though my mute system is not entirely off. So would you all please press mute if you're on a cell phone, since it's often the cell phone that creates noise on the line. And otherwise press star 6 on your phone. And let's see if we can get rid of some of the ambient noise here. Okay. So this sounds pretty good. And so we'll begin. One thing I also wanted to mention, which has probably been pretty obvious to many of you, is that when we start a process like this, when we begin a process of deepening our connection with spirit in a deliberate way, especially through meditation, that upheavals will often show up in our dreams, and there'll be a sense, an experience of shifts going on in our consciousness. We become often aware of qualities in ourselves that may have been hidden or that may want to be revealed. Sometimes the dreams are very mysterious. Sometimes it's quite apparent that our attention is being drawn to some issue in our life. And this is actually one of the gifts of an intensive meditation practice, is that that there is an actual process of turning over the soil of the unconscious that's very beneficial. So today, as we allow ourselves to be present to the spirit in the universe, which holds us in a kind of omniscient gaze of love, you know, it's very important, very, very, very important to recognize that the eye of spirit is the eye of love. It's the eye of utter absolute acceptance. And I must say, for me and for many people who've done this practice with me, the experience of being seen has actually been a profound experience of exactly that, of recognizing that the universe, which may have seemed hard, is actually loving and benign. So this is a good thing. And we're going to begin in a few minutes with our chant. But first, I'd like to read to you a poem by Rumi, who's kind of the patron spirit of this particular class, this particular practice. This is a poem about the presence of spirit in the universe, about the love intelligence here of the universe. Spirit as the cosmos itself, as the grandeur of nature, as the power that explodes, as the cosmic fireball that created this universe 15 billion years ago and still reverberates through space. Some traditions say that our role in the universe is actually to be the witnesses, to be the mirror that reflects this extraordinary, omnipresent, blissful divinity in the universe. In Rumi's time, there was an instrument called the astrolabe, which showed a map of the heavens, and which you could look into and actually see the constellations moving. He says, just as this copper astrolabe is a mirror of the heavens, the awakened human being is the astrolabe of the mysteries of God. The awakened human being is the theater in which the divine mysteries appear. So here's the poem that we want to start with. It's a poem in which we actually are asked to recognize, to witness the infinite beauty in this world. Know, O my child, he says, that each thing in the universe is a vessel full to the brim with wisdom and beauty. Know, my child, that each thing is a drop from the burning river of his infinite beauty. It is a hidden treasure because of its fullness. It has exploded and made the earth more brilliant than the skies. It is a hidden treasure because of its fullness. It has sprung out and made the earth like an emperor wrapped in a robe of burning satin. You know, so this is the inner experience of spirit in the third person, spirit as the light that actually fills everything in the universe, including ourselves. So, and today, we're going to practice with spirit in the second person, something which is really the height, the heart of divine mystery, how this vastness, which appears as earth, sky, universe, can also appear as a divine person, as the beloved, as the protector, as the father, the mother, the infinite companion. So, let's begin by taking our meditative posture. You can find yourself a comfortable upright posture, your feet flat on the floor if you're on a chair, feeling very well propped if you're sitting on the floor. And with the inhalation, feel the hips and thighs and sitting bones getting heavy and grounded. See if you can feel both sides of your buttocks equally sinking into the seat. And then with the next exhalation, feel how the energy in your inner body, the energy in the center of your body, flows upward through the crown. You inhale, and the shoulder blades release onto the back. You exhale, and the chest lifts and opens. You inhale, and you sense your head poised perfectly on your neck. Your chin is slightly tucked. The crown of your head lifts up towards the ceiling. Let your attention come to the breath. And now feel as if there is a nose, an opening in the center of your chest, and the breath flows into the heart, flows in and out of the heart. Very gently, caressingly, we'll keep coming back to this. But for now, just see if you can let your awareness be present in the heart as we chant our opening mantras and then say our prayer for the welfare of all beings. all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. May we experience equanimity beyond grasping, hatred, or dullness. And may we know the equality of all that lives. Through the breath flowing in and out, having the sense that as the breath flows in, you're very, very gently breathing in spirit, breathing in divine energy, in with the particles of breath, feeling them flow through your body, feeling spirit flow through your body as energy, as light, perhaps as a feeling of tenderness or spaciousness. The breath flows in, bringing particles of spirit, particles of divinity, particles of that river of infinite beauty into your body, flowing through your body as presence, as energy, as light. As openness, spaciousness. As love. Tonight, as we were last night, but we'll have fewer meditations and longer ones. And I want to begin by talking a little bit about the practices that we'll be doing this week, the practice of meditation and prayer with second person spirit. Spirit as thou. Spirit as the beloved. Spirit as the protector. Spirit as Father, Mother, Spirit as the intimate companion, Spirit as the friend. The second person Spirit in the second person is the form of Spirit, the form of divinity that the mystical poets write about, the one whom the Psalms are addressed to, the one, the friend Rumi speaks to, the beloved that Kabir writes in his magnificent poems about. So second person practice, it's practice with a personal form of the divine, with what we could call an incarnate form of the divine, with an actual person, a divine person, as they say in my tradition. The practice of second person spirit is incarnated in many different ways in different traditions. In the Jewish tradition and in the Sufi tradition, of course, God is never experienced as having a form. God is always seen and known as formless. And yet, there is a tremendous, deep deep, deep practice of second-person devotional relationship to a very intimate form of spirit. God and the second person is not an abstraction or universal intelligence, but is a very close, very present, very loving beloved, one whom you may feel you know intimately, or one whom you may be seeking, one whom you may feel separate from, because in the tradition of second person practice, there's an enormous body of prayer and worship and meditation that's based on feeling separate from the beloved and praying and chanting and bringing to bring the beloved close. So practice with second person divinity is at its best, at its height, really a way of divine relationship with a being who loves you, who calls you to your highest self, who invites you to experience the purest form of love, and who also protects you, nurtures you, whom you can speak to, whom you can shout at. Some of the great mystical poets had very, what we might call, rude and irreverent conversations with spirit, like Saint Teresa, who once said, after a particularly grueling journey on her way to found a convent, she said, "Lord, if this is the way you treat your friends, it's a wonder that you have so few of them." You know, that it can be a very, very intimate relationship. My friend Mark Goffney, who is a Jewish teacher, calls this form of spirit the God who knows your name. The God who knows your name. The personal form of spirit, your own guide. For some of us, we may experience it as a guardian angel, as an angelic presence. For some of us, certainly for me, historically, it's been the figure of my guru and my guru's guru. For many people, it's a deity form, a very much a form, like Lakshmi or Shiva or Krishna. This is the divine, in other words, as a subtle energetic being, not necessarily a being with a body that you can see and touch, although we are going to do a practice of seeing God in a person, in a living human being. This is the divine as what Jesus called the comforter, which is a phrase I particularly love, the comforter, the inner presence who supports and nourishes us. Second person spiritual practices include most of the practices of the mystical and religious traditions. So prayer, which we're going to work with today, is one. Mantra is a second person spiritual practice. Every form of ritual and worship, chanting, dedicating your actions, doing seva, offering your actions, dialoguing, conversation with the divine, visualizations, meditations on great beings or deities, of which we do quite a few in our classes. The goal and the gift of second person practice is relationship. This is very important. It's really about relationship. It's about opening up to a relationship with that which is subtler than the subtlest. You know, so it's about love. It's about closeness. It's about, and this is one of the characteristics of this path, it's about allowing your emotions, the beautiful emotions and the more difficult emotions, to come out, to be turned towards the divine, to be turned towards the sense of God's presence. Many, many mystics in the traditions, in the Christian tradition, certainly in the Hindu and Sufi traditions, in the Jewish traditions, have followed the path of second person spirit to a state of merging with the divine, a state of oneness, even in some cases to an experience of complete non-duality. But the essential stance of second person spirituality is relationship. It's a practice in which you enjoy God, in which you feel the blissful presence of the beloved, the intimacy of connection with an inner friend. It's, you know, there's second person spirit gives you the feeling of being protected, of loving and being loved, of having a place to take refuge. And what I've found over the years is that when I feel like I'm in trouble, when I need help, when I'm scared, when I see my own inadequacies, or when I'm face to face with one of my shadow qualities, one of those qualities in myself that I wish I didn't have to see and which I wish I could get rid of, but which is right there in my face, that's when you want not awe at the vastness of the universe, or even you don't even want necessarily the recognition of your own deepest consciousness. What you want is help from the infinite, help from the power of grace. You want a relationship. You want a relationship. You want to be close to a being who will never let you down. I mean, let's face it, that's the depth of the practice of second person spirit, is deepening recognition that there is that in this universe which loves you, which is there for you, which is present for you, which shines through the faces of the people that you love, which is there even when the people that you love are gone, or have left you, or have died. You know, and I also want to say here that when we talk about divine help or to God in the second person, we're really not talking about that conventional God up in the heavens, the parental figure of the Orthodox religious traditions, even though for some of us, our introduction to second person spirit came through Orthodox traditions and may have been very beautiful. It may also have been kind of off-putting. So I have Christian and Jewish friends who spend a lot of friends who are priests and rabbis who spend quite a lot of time ministering to heartbroken former members of their congregations, especially Christians, you know, people who once had a very deep childhood heart connection with Jesus, who's, you know, one of the great figures of kindling the experience of the spirit in the second person, and who lost it, and who lost that connection as they grew up. And usually there were two reasons for this. One is that the Orthodox churches, the conventional churches and teachers, weren't really able to support a mystical feeling, a mystical relationship. And the other is that as we go to university, as we study science, we come across the deep postmodern and postmodern view that faith is somehow conflated with pre-modern superstition. So we think of second person practices, you know, kind of dorky or deluded or somehow childish. So we're much more comfortable looking for spirit in as pure consciousness, or looking for spirit in nature, or recognizing the awe-inspiring vastness of the universe, the spirit in that. And to begin to open up to the practice of second person spirit, of devotional spirit, is really very profound, and it will sometimes bring about resistances and sometimes an enormous sense of relief. I know that one of the things for some of the people who study with me is that they're in some of the cutting edge spiritual circles, certainly in my neck of the woods. There's a very strong tendency for teachers and practitioners to privilege first-person spirit as your inmost self. You know, my teacher also taught that God dwells within you as you, was one of his main teaching. And again, many of the people I know, especially long-time practitioners, approach meditation through what's sometimes called the direct path practice, where you actually become the witness and inquire into the nature of yourself and really try to stay as much in identification with pure spirit as possible. So in that kind of practice, what often happens is that the heart gets dry. And in moments of trouble, in moments of difficulty, there's no sense that there's something greater than yourself that, just to put it in the baldest terms, is taking care of you. There's no place for surrender for devotion, for the feeling of protection. So second person spirit is that which you can surrender to, that which you can ask for protection. And in my tradition, in the Hindu tantric traditions, there's enormous comfort, as I believe I said last week, with seeing the divine as everything, seeing the divine as the inmost self, and seeing the divine as a person. My guru, who was radically enlightened, who experienced the world as the light of the divine, also worshipped his guru, bowed down to his guru with utter childlike devotion, and put garlands on statues and said mantras and did all sorts of second person spiritual practice. And he did it as a matter of course, but also because it's delightful. Mystical poets often talk about not wanting to have the kind of enlightenment where you just become one with consciousness, because it's when you have a slight sense of separation that you can experience relationship, that you can experience love, that you can have a juicy, playful lila, as we say in Sanskrit, with the divine. Kabir, the mystical poet who, like Rumi, segued between the pure oneness of spirit as first person, spirit as the self, and very, very loving, devotional relationship. He wrote, "Why should we two have to part? We live together as the great one and the little one, as the water lily, as the leaf of the water rhubarb lives floating in the water. We live as the great one and the little one. As the owl opens his eyes all night to the moon, we live as the great one and the little one. This love between us goes back to the first humans. It cannot be annihilated." Here is Kabir's idea. As the river gives itself to the sea, what is inside me moves inside you. So please take a good, comfortable posture, letting your body become upright. Breathing in and letting the sitting bones sink again. Breathing out and allowing the breath to bring your body upright, lifting your body from inside. Inhaling and feeling the shoulder blades release down the back. Exhaling, allowing the chest to open. Your awareness with the breath. Just let the breath come as it will, as it wants to. And consider a time when you sat or stood in nature or contemplated the universe and recognized its sheer vastness. A time when you looked at the stars and considered how many worlds exist in space. How many insects, how many leaves and how many trees, how many human beings, how many animals, how many fish in the sea. How vast is this world we live in, this earth we live on, and how much vaster is the universe beyond. Consider the millions of other universes existing along with this one. And consider that all these universes exist within one vast, loving intelligence, endless, indescribable, infinitely powerful, unimaginably mysterious, beyond conception, beyond knowing. Allow yourself to open just for a moment to the power and scale of all this. The breath comes. The breath comes in and goes out. can find yourself now sitting on the earth in a sacred grove, a cushion beneath you, the sky starry, very close. Soft wind. The atmosphere is warm. And you experience, seated before you in the sky, a being who is the absolute, complete embodiment of that vastness. Perhaps that being appears in a form as a Buddha, as Christ, as a saint that you know, or some completely unfamiliar form as a deity, as Kali or Shiva or Kuan Yin, as the Great Mother, as a sage. And perhaps that being is simply present as a presence or a sense of shimmering in the air. But you recognize as this being comes close to you and sits in front of you that this being contains all the love, all the intelligence, all the vastness and power of the infinite spirit that appears as the universe. This being is the incarnation of spirit itself, fully present, looking at you with indescribable love. And let yourself take in the blessing, the love of spirit as the divine other, the God who knows your name. Notice if there's something that you want to say or convey to this being. Notice if there's something that this being wants to convey to you. Let yourself now sit with the breath, taking in the energy of this incarnate being, this incarnate presence of spirit within you. Spirit within you, meeting spirit as a being who sits before you, loving you. Stay with the breath and notice if the presence myself stay with the breath and the sense of incarnate divine presence. Open your eyes when you're ready. I know for some of you this was strong, and for some of you it didn't quite gel, which is fine, and which is often the way it begins when we begin doing this kind of practice. It's this understanding, however, that the devotional traditions want us to get, that spirit in the second person, the idea of spirit in the second person, is that a human being or a deity incarnates the entire vastness of spirit in an accessible, lovable, relatable form. The most famous forms, of course, of incarnate divinity are Jesus, who is a completely extraordinary container for divine presence. The only problem being that people in fundamentalist Christian traditions think he's the only one. In the Indian tradition, the two main avatars, as they're called, they're literally human beings who come to Earth and fully holding all the qualities of spirit. Rama and Krishna are the names of those incarnations, especially Krishna, who's considered to be an absolute full incarnation of the entirety of divine presence. And interestingly enough, in the Hindu tradition, in some of the Hindu traditions, Buddha is also considered an incarnation of the same aspect of the divine that Krishna is. And in the traditions, in the saint traditions, in the traditions of Sufism and in Vajrayana Buddhism and in the Hindu guru traditions, there's a practice of recognizing the guru, recognizing the teacher as the incarnation of spirit, understanding that it's not the teacher's human personality which is being worshipped when we see the guru as divine. It's the energy of grace that flows through the teacher, that infuses the teacher, that moves through the teacher, and that, in this way, it's often said in practices, in the esoteric practices of deity practice or guru yoga, that the whole point, the whole purpose of the practice is to see the figure of the deity or the figure of the guru as fully divine and is also one with you, one with yourself. It's a very, very mysterious practice. And one of the great rationales for it is in the Bhagavad Gita. There's this very famous moment when Krishna gives Arjuna, his disciple and friend, a vision of his cosmic form, and he just opens himself up, and it becomes all the worlds. He becomes the fire that will destroy the worlds. He becomes the fire out of which new worlds are born, and Arjuna sees the entire universe, all of time and space. And he freaks. It's too much for him. He's terrified. And he begs Krishna to return to his normal form. He said, please return to your beloved four-armed form. Krishna has four arms. The one that I can experience as a friend. And then he says, oh my God, I can't believe it. I slapped you in the back and teased you and beat you in chariot racing and stole women from you. You contain all that. But that's the subtlety and the mystery of the divine in form, that we can relate to this form as someone we know, someone we love. So the understanding is that because the cosmic vastness is just too big to grasp, God finds a way, the divine finds a way to personalize itself. That's very important. You know, it's very important to recognize that the intention to take a form is a divine intention. It's not something we make up. You know, and this is a question that comes up often. Does the divine really take on a personal form, which we then invoke by worship and prayer and meditation? Or are our practices a form of imagination? Are we creating the experience? And I would say that, of course, because everything is ultimately consciousness, we do create within our own consciousness. And yet, my personal experience after about 35 years of having relationships with personified spirit is that there really is indeed an energetic reality. In fact, several forms of energetic reality that are aspects of personal spirit. Some of them, many of them, open up into the vastness when you meditate on them. So there really are deities. There really are ascended masters. There really are Buddha fields. We can see them in meditation if we're like that, but more, and this is my experience, we feel them, we experience their presence during moments of grace. I don't have visions. Sometimes I have visionary dreams, but I don't have visions, which some of you may have had. You may have had very tangible visions of spirit, of Jesus or Krishna or your guru, or you may have had the kind of experience I have, very tangible feeling of unnamed presence that comes up when you're in touch with grace. And for me, I want to tell you an experience of mine that really demonstrated to me the reality of second person spirit outside my own capacity for invention. And I'd like to ask you, if you've fallen into meditation or not come out of the last meditation, to wake up for just a moment and hear this. So stay with me here. A friend of mine had given me a book a book from one of the Catholic presses on the modern appearances, the apparitions, as they're called, of the Virgin Mary, who's shown up in physical forms in several well-documented miracles, like at Lourdes and Fatima and Medjugorje. The most famous being her appearance in Guadalupe, Mexico, where she imprinted her image on a cloth that still hangs in the Basilica in Mexico City. So I was reading the story of the Virgin of Guadalupe, and suddenly I felt a shimmering in the air and an overwhelming, overwhelming feeling of love. Just profound, motherly, soft love, and very much present, really almost as though a being were in the air slightly to my right and a little bit to the side, in front of me, but slightly to my right. And a knowing arose in me. I can only call it a knowing because there were no words with it, but it just came as an absolute conviction that this was Mary herself. And the extraordinary thing was that she stayed with me for 2 days, day and night. She was there when I was taking a bath. She was there when I was taking a walk. And it was a time when things were very hard for me. My spiritual life was feeling very, very hard, as things sometimes do when you're experiencing a lot of ego purification. And what she kept conveying to me was that she loved me unconditionally, that she was there for me, that love was part of me, that love held me, that I could pray to her, that she would always be there. And then at one moment, after about 2 days, I began to think to myself, I was kind of a I was kind of my own version of a Hindu fundamentalist in those days. And in the tradition I was in, the idea was that you're supposed to be very, very one-pointed on your own tradition and your own teacher. And I started to think, well, I'm not a Christian. I have a guru. I don't need to have a relationship with this being. And, you know, maybe my relationship with my guru is a little hard right now, but after all, my guru is my guru. And as I started to have those thoughts, Mary disappeared. So I wouldn't recommend taking this attitude when a love-saturated being appears to you, by the way. Though I will say that her presence in my life continues. She's very much available when invoked. But the point is that I didn't create this experience. It happened. It arose on its own. And this is, I would say, how we know that second person spirit is real, because there are times when we have that experience of presence, sometimes as a result of invocation or prayer and meditation, and sometimes for no reason at all. But I would say also that there's a very definite creative aspect of invoking second person spirit. It definitely is true that in a certain sense we do need to kind of carve out a place in consciousness for that very subtle sense of being to emerge, to be present for us. And this is the reason we practice. When you pray or meditate with a sense that you're in the presence of a divine being, as we were doing, you do, in a sense, manifest that form in your consciousness, or rather you bring forth that form in your consciousness. You know, in the tradition, manifestation is really bringing forth something that's already present, which is hidden. So it's like we bring forth the hidden treasure of the avatar, of the incarnate being, of the presence of our Ishta Devata, our personal spirit, of our guide, of our guru. In Tibetan deity practice, there's a very, very rigorous practice of where you visualize the form of a deity, and you do it in a lot of detail, and you do it again and again over a period of time with mantras until you can actually get that deity to appear as a detailed vision in your mind. And I would say it's hard, but it doesn't take that long. It's actually possible with a few weeks or months of focused practice to have a very strong sense of the presence of a deity energy. And so in a sense you create that form within yourself, you shape your consciousness in that form. It exists in consciousness. And the idea here is then that you make that form real, and you recognize it, and you relate to it, and then you take it back into your own consciousness and realize, which is what we'll do next week, that divine form is also, is actually you, is your own consciousness. So, in a sense, we do manifest a form through our practice, but what we manifest is really there. It's really there. We simply have to, as it were, massage consciousness to get consciousness to unfold for us. So the practices, especially some of the key practices like prayer, mantra practice, the powerful second person practice, talking to the divine, visualization, contemplating spirit in a particular form, these are key to the path of second person practice, and they're all relational practices. And what that means, I want to tell you something some of you know, but for some of you this may come as a surprise, and it's a powerfully important secret on the path of second person relationship to spirit. There's a delicate art, even I would say an etiquette, for approaching the beloved, the divine, in second person. We do it always with a sense that we are wooing or romancing spirit. You know, we make offerings, perhaps. mental offerings or physical offerings, but especially the offering of our full attention. We coax, we pray, we talk, we flirt even if we have that kind of relationship with the divine. We offer seva, we offer service, and we do it with a longing, with a desire to experience the beloved. And when we do it, and this is really important, we don't necessarily expect instant results. Sometimes we can have a very powerful and palpable experience at the beginning of practice, and then it's absent for a while. Sometimes it actually takes a while to kindle that sense of presence. But there's a deep mystery and a deep importance in the fact that the divine asks us to keep trying, to keep asking, to keep standing at the door, to keep coaxing. There's a Sufi story about a man who falls in love with the image of a princess. And he goes to the place where she lives, which is a tower outside of the city. He knocks on the door, and of course, they won't let him in. He's just a regular person. He's not a member of the court. But he's obsessed with the princess. He deeply wants to know her, so he begins to circle the tower, to walk around the tower. And after he's been walking around the tower for about a week, he sees a glimpse of her hand. So he realizes she's there, and he senses that she's aware of him. And then a few days later, her arm is seen draped across the windowsill. Days go by, and one day he sees her face at the window. And it goes on like this until the princess begins to come to the window and wave to him, and then one day, of course, she invites him in. So you can see the point in this parable. It's our effort, our coaxing, our longing, our wanting, our intention that brings forth relationship with spirit. And I want you to know, if you've never done this kind of practice, it is so worth it. It's so incredibly worth it, because in that moment when you glimpse that miraculous presence, that shimmering feeling of divinity with you, next to you, it's one of the great, great relational moments of life. You know, Rumi says, "The moment I heard my first love story, I came looking for you." It's really that which we're looking for. So again, you can bring your awareness to the breath. And if at this moment you'd like to stand up and stretch for a moment, you can do that. We're going to be doing a rather elaborate prayer practice in just a moment. So it's important to place yourself in a way that you'll feel comfortable. And you don't have to set yourself in your posture just yet, because I'm going to say a little something about prayer. Usually we think of prayer as a kind of ritualized practice, you know, that some of us used to do on our knees beside the bed, where we recite Our Father who art in heaven, or Parukata Adonai Alehenu, or Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Satchidananda Murtaye. That's a prayer. The kind of prayer we'll do today is a prayer that we do in the heart and that opens into meditation. And in the course of it, we'll go through some steps, through some ritual steps, and I'd like to ask you to follow them. And at some point, you'll probably find yourself segueing into meditation. I just took a moment to cough there. And if at any point I go mute in the middle of the sentence, it's because I'm taking a moment not to disturb you. Every now and then a cough happens. So, as we start, I want to say something about attitude. Attitude, in Sanskrit, the word is bhava, B-H-A-V-A, which actually means the emotional feeling, the feeling tone you bring to a practice. So attitude or bhava is really the secret of devotional practice. The prayer or the mantra or the worship practice is just the form, as it were. Not that it's not important, but the juice, the resonance, is in the feeling you kindle as you do it. So it's really one of the great mystical secrets. The poet Tukaram says, God is in your feeling. God is in your feeling. And Kabir says, God is in your longing. So the secret they're telling us is really the purpose of the practice is not so much what you see. It's not so much that some sort of miraculous vision should occur. It's really what happens inside you, what the feeling that you're able to kindle in your practice. Sometimes the feeling is very present, sometimes less so. Sometimes we actually feel dry. Sometimes we feel very, very filled with longing and desire. And the trick is to keep constantly with your practice, with your prayer practice, asking for opening, asking for that inner feeling. So the way we trigger an inner feeling state that connects us to the divine and second person is by the attitude that we take in the practice itself. And a lot of the art of devotional practice is to cultivate an attitude that feels natural and that you can work with to create connection. It'll be different at different times. There are times when there'll be a natural sense of gratitude or a natural sense of longing. Sometimes you'll just see beauty or feel love. But I would say that in general, there are three very powerful bhavas or emotions that kindle the depths of prayer practice. One is the feeling of affection, the feeling of tenderness towards yourself or towards the being you're invoking. And any kind of affectionate feeling, any kind of tenderness can be the basis for prayer. You know, a simple feeling of softness in your heart, or you can take the feeling you have for a friend or for your mother, for your lover, and you can bring that feeling into the heart and make that the soil for your prayer. The second very powerful feeling that helps to kindle what the Sufis call warmth in the heart is longing. Again, any kind of longing. You know, the nameless longing for sweetness, for love, longing for an absent loved one, longing to be free from qualities in yourself that you find hurtful. You know, we don't always feel love, we don't always feel longing, but we can cultivate these feelings. And the third feeling, which is what we're going to practice with tonight, is helplessness. Helplessness, the feeling of neediness, the feeling of helplessness and need. You know, as adults, we're not used to being needy, and it's actually an insult to call somebody needy, especially in our relationships. You know, we say, this person's so needy, I can't ever satisfy them, I don't even want to be around them. And, you know, sometimes we feel needy ourselves with someone, it's kind of shaming and painful. So in our lives as adults, we want to be independent except with the people we most trust. But the truth is that the place to be needy is in your relationship with spirit. And I think we all know that there are many stories in the traditions about proud, accomplished people getting kind of knocked to the ground by life and being, you know, in their helplessness, suddenly discovering their support. God is their support. It's the origin myth of Alcoholics Anonymous. The story of Bill Wilson who has a moment of complete helpless bottoming out and takes refuge in God. And you know, from that the entire 12-step movement is born. In the path of relationship to second person spirit, the most important thing is to deepen your connection, to feel your connection, and to actually make spirit our refuge. So one thing I would say is that it's very, very important to realize that when your life is a mess or when your life is great, when you come in front of spirit with a sense of taking refuge, with a sense of not having control over your life, with a sense of knowing that you can't open yourself, that you can't even love without God's love, without the love of the beloved loving through you, that when you are able to recognize that, it's a powerful, powerful place for transformation. And this is what Rumi says about it. These are Rumi's words, and I'd like you to now close your eyes and take these in and see if you can feel how it's true in your life. Here's what he says. What is bounty without a beggar? What is generosity without a guest? Be beggar and guest, for beauty is seeking a mirror. Water is crying for a thirsty man. The way of the lover, the way of Moses, is all hopelessness and need, and it is the only way to God. The way of Moses is all helplessness and need, and it is the only way to God. Don't flee across the chessboard of this world, for it is his game, and we are checkmate. Tell me, how will you impress God? You are 100,000 dinars in his debt. A beggar shows his blindness and his palsy. He doesn't say, give me bread, O people. I'm a rich man with granaries and palaces. Bring 100 sacks of gold, and God will say, bring the heart. And if you bring a dead heart, God will say, bring a live heart. This is not a graveyard. I want the live heart. So if you can only crawl to him, you can't pray sincerely, offer your dry, hypocritical, agnostic prayer, for God in his mercy accepts bad coin. If you have 100 doubts of God, make them into 90 doubts. This is the way. O seeker, though you have broken your vows 100 times, come again. Come again. Come again. This is the God who knows your name, who calls you from the heart. And this is the attitude with which we'll begin our first prayer. We're going to pray asking for help, not material help, but help in opening the heart. So this is a meditative prayer. I'll actually send you some practices for other kinds of petitionary prayer this week. So we're going to start now in a very simple way. Tuning into the heart. And know that at some point in the practice you may simply find yourself in meditation. That's fine, because this is meditative prayer. What's sometimes called in the Christian tradition contemplative prayer. So you can begin by firming your posture, letting the sitting bones become heavy against the cushion. Letting the upper body rise up from this grounded base. Inhaling and allowing the shoulder blades to release on the back, down the back. Exhaling, letting the chest lift and open. And you can put your hand over your heart. Feel the contact between your hand and your heart. Notice that when you put your hand on your heart, it does kindle a warmth, a sense of contact. And gently begin to breathe into the heart with a sense that there is an opening behind your hand. When the breath is coming directly in through the chest wall, let the breath come softly, and as it does, have the sense that it's flowing with the loving presence of the divine. Feel the breath as a gentle touch inside your heart. And you might find a moment, you might bring into your heart a moment of tenderness, a moment of affection, a thought of someone you love, or a memory of a time when everything was particularly sweet. And find the feeling, the tender feeling in that moment. And feel that tenderness as the intimation of spirit within you. Your attention is in the heart. Your eyes are closed. And you find yourself now standing in front of a temple, a holy building, a holy place. Notice the shape and size of it, and for some of you, it may be a very amorphous presence. The temple may be maybe white like a Greek temple, or carved like a cathedral, or painted and domed. Your awareness is still in the heart, and you sense yourself walking up the steps of the temple. You approach the place of prayer one step at a time, walking up the steps with your hand on your heart. And as you stand on the porch in front of the temple, you see that in front of you there is a pool, a crystalline pool of water. You dip your hands in the water and you sprinkle it over your head. The water pours down through your body. You do it again. You sprinkle the water on your head. It's the cleansing light of divine presence. Once again, you scoop up water and allow it to fall over your head. And you feel that the water flows through your whole body. And it cleanses whatever obstructions or resistances may be there, so that as you approach the temple with a heart that's open, ready to receive grace. It's not necessary that every single impurity in your being be cleansed, but in that gesture of pouring holy water, sprinkling holy water over yourself, you actually signal the divine that you're ready to be in his presence, in her presence. You walk now to the door of the temple and you notice the carvings on the door. And you notice that the door has a quality, a glow about it, a sense of presence about it. You're actually opening now, you're opening the door to the temple of your personal form of spirit. That being who is the beloved of your heart, as you open the door and you step inside, you experience an enormous sense of sacredness, of presence. And in front of you, seated on the altar, is that being whom you have seen or contacted or touched earlier this evening. That being is shining, is loving, is perhaps present in a very specific form, or perhaps, again, simply as a presence. And as you approach, you find yourself in a deep bow. You bow before Spirit in this form. And as you do, you have the thought, may I be healed, may I be opened. May I experience your presence in its fullest. And as you rise from your bow and seat yourself in front of the altar, you're very close to the being. And for some of you, that being may appear as space, like the temple in Chidambaram where the Holy of Holies is simply space, and where the sense of divine presence is almost overwhelming in that spaciousness. And you find these words arising as an invocation. Listen and allow them to be your words for this moment. Holy Spirit, giving life to all life, moving all creatures, root of all things, washing them clean, wiping out their mistakes, healing their wounds. You are our true life, luminous, wonderful, awakening the heart from its ancient sleep. And now with the sense that you are speaking to that infinite spirit who has taken form before you, and who also exists within your own heart, begin to pray. Pray, let my heart open. Let me experience the fullness of love. Let my heart open. Let me experience the fullness of love. You might find that these words repeat themselves, or you might find that they become shorter. Let my heart open. Let me experience love. Let me experience the fullness of your love. Allow those words to drop into your heart. allow yourself to feel the connection to this presence, this being. As the breath flows in and out through your heart, feel yourself breathing in and breathing out the love of this being who sits before you, incarnating spirit, loving you, opening you to love. Prayer, let my heart open. Let me experience the fullness of your love. Takes deeper and deeper root in your heart. Allow yourself to rest inside the heart. Allow the prayer to be answered from within your heart. Allow your prayer to become a meditation. moment or two, our call will be coming to an end. And you're very welcome to sit in meditation. And I would suggest that if you have time, you take a few moments as you come out to write down what you noticed, what you experienced. And, of course, we'd love it if you share your experience with us. This week, we're going to be doing second-person practice. We're going to be meditating in the heart with a sense of prayerfulness. And I'll send you the instructions, your homework assignment. And in addition, I'm going to ask you to contemplate your relationship with spirit as a being, spirit as a guide, to think about the times in your life when you've had a sense of a guiding presence or a loving presence. And that might include some painful experiences of second person spirit, because some of us have them left over from childhood. What we really want to do is to begin to recognize the fact that there is this incarnate spirit, this presence, which is ours to call on, ours to speak to, ours to love, ours to be loved by. And that the real truth of the divine mystery in this personal form, even if that personal form is paradoxically enough formless, nonetheless, that personal form appears to us as a feeling sense, as a sense of presence. That the deepest and most satisfying relationship can be cultivated as we're willing to open ourselves up to the mystery of the divine appearing as the God who knows your name, as the beloved, as the friend, as the protector, as the guide, as the comforter, as the place of refuge. So may this practice be of great fruit to you, and may it be enjoyable and juicy, because that really is the gift of second person spirit. He's surprising. She's surprising. She's adorable. He loves you. Have a beautiful evening. Namaste. Good night.